This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, the best-selling author of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Now on the air and online worldwide at paytaxeslater.com. Get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. I'm David Baer with Jim Lang, CPA, attorney, and author of two best-selling books, Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. As everyone knows, congressional gridlock shut down the federal government for 2 weeks and threatened the country's credit rating. While an 11th-hour short-term solution seems to have been reached, what long-term impact might continuing political turmoil have on your retirement portfolio? For perspectives on building the kind of retirement plan that can weather future political storms, we welcome P.J. DeNuzzo back to the show. A nationally recognized expert in investment management, P.J. has been featured in numerous business publications and TV shows. Approved as one of the first 100-dimensional fund advisors, he's rated a 5-star advisor by Paladin Registry Investor Watchdog, scoring in the top 1% of America's more than 800,000 investment advisors. Based in the Pittsburgh area, his firm, DeNuzzo Index Advisors, also consistently ranks among the country's top 500 investment companies. In addition to potential financial repercussions from governmental gridlock, Jim and PJ will focus on investment strategies to maximize your portfolio over the long run, including a 10-step roadmap for retirement income success. It's sure to be an interesting, informative hour, and listeners, since the show is live, you can join the conversation by calling the KQV studios at 412-333-9385. Again, that number is 412-333-9385. And with that, I'll say hello, Jim, and welcome, PJ.
Good evening, Dave.
Hi, PJ.
Hey, Jim. Good evening. How are you doing?
Good, good. Before we get into the night, to the meat of the show, I do feel honor-bound under the full disclosure concept to disclose that I am not independent of you. So, for example, when we have Ed Slott on, or we have John Bogle or Jane Bryan Quinn or any of the various experts that we have had on, and sometimes I do put a little plug in for their books, ultimately I have no financial interest if somebody buys their book, if somebody doesn't, if somebody uses their service, if somebody doesn't. I don't think it would be fair if I didn't disclose that I do have a financial interest in working with you, and I should describe that for a minute before we get into the essence of the or the meat of the show. PJ is, I believe, one of, if not the top money manager, certainly in the area using low-cost index funds. And I've been extremely impressed with his work, and particularly after working with him. And to oversimplify the situation, if you were to go to PJ and let's say you had never heard of me, and let's say you were going to say, well, here, PJ, we're interested in investing $500,000 with you, he would charge roughly 1% of the amount that he has invested, to be more technical, 0.25% per quarter. If, on the other hand, you were to meet me and you were interested in things like Roth IRA conversion, Social Security maximization, tax planning, estate planning, etc., but you were also interested in investing in low-cost index funds, PJ and I have an arrangement whereby he would actually do the investments. I would do the, let's say, or I shouldn't say I because I have to include my office too, but I and my office would do things like Roth IRA conversion, Social Security, tax planning, how much you could spend, estate planning, etc. And what we would do is we would charge a total of 1%. So rather than paying PJ a fee and rather than paying me a fee, you would pay one fee, and then PJ and I split this fee. So if you like what some of the things that you hear tonight and you are potentially interested in working with the combination of me and PJ, you should know ahead of time that I do have an interest, that is a financial interest, in you working with PJ and me. So before I get into the meat, I just wanted to explain that. I hope, is that a fair characterization, PJ?
Yes, very fair, very accurate.
All right, so why don't we get into the meat of tonight's show? And, of course, what's going on in everybody's mind right now is the shutdown, and perhaps even more scary for me, is potentially not paying our debts. PJ, can you tell us a little bit about what you think is going on and maybe how you think investors should react to this news?
Yeah, Jim, what we say is we look at this, and we're not being flippant or insensitive to it, but basically we would look at, what's currently going on as basically market noise, and we would refer to it as noise for a long-term investor. When we take a look at it, as you and I have talked before, and as we know, we've got an 85-year track record with the indexes that we follow, U.S. large stocks and small stocks. And there's been a lot worse things such as world wars, presidential assassinations, inflation, deflation, stagflation, et cetera. So, again, not to be casual about what we're going through now, but these things always get worked out one way or the other. We've got a long-term upward growth bias just in our economy growing by 2 or 3% per year. A little bit of inflation on top of that. So there's been an upward growth bias in our economy for the last couple hundred years. So we feel confident that will continue to manifest itself in the near, intermediate future and long term as well.
Well, this sounds like the opposite of a timing strategist.
I could picture
a lot of people saying, I could picture some people saying, oh my goodness, we're going down the tubes. We better sell everything and convert to cash and bonds. And I can picture other people saying, oh boy, when we have all this fear out there, this is actually a great time to buy, so we're going to jump in the market. So you have some people that want to jump out and some people that want to jump in, and you're saying, if I'm understanding you right, no, now is basically the time to hold the course, if you will. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, Jim, that's a good characterization. And as you know intimately, we walk our clients that we work through jointly as well as ourselves independently. So that was a very good point you made earlier, that our clients who work with jointly are getting both of us, your entire office and all of your resources as well as our entire team for the same price. And as we walk them through the process, one thing that's very unique is really identifying for individuals. If anyone's listening or thinking like pre-retirement where they're getting ready to retire, the questions, when we take a look at individuals' cases, they're often off by hundreds of thousands of dollars regarding how they've been working with someone and what they should allocate towards. We would call it their needs bucket: food, clothing, shelter, healthcare, and transportation. We just met actually with a prospective client, last night that had overallocated about $150,000 to almost $200,000 to that needs bucket that they didn't have to. If you're paying for something like a guaranteed product, if it's an annuity, why tie up money for the rest of your life paying 3% per year in expenses when it could be 1%? So it's all really about customizing that process. And we find whenever we go through these periods of market tumult that it's a lot easier for clients to stay in their seat if they have, on average, we've got three strategies for the average client that we work with who's retired, but a specific conservative strategy for those needs, a strategy with a little bit more in stocks, but still we call it a moderate strategy for their wants, and then growth in their portfolio for their wishes and dreams and for their, we call it legacy, for their children, grandchildren, and charities, and quality of life while they're living. And a lot of clients, Jim, that's where we're having, for a lot of clients, the most growth in their portfolios, which you're the expert in, is in the Roth IRA conversion area. If we think of our money stacked from the floor to the ceiling, that money at the top that we're never going to touch, it's great to place it in something from 70% of stocks up to 100%, it's going to have great growth over the rest of their lives.
All right, so let me understand this. Let's say somebody comes in with X amount of dollars, and what you're saying is that you're going to try to actually calculate how much money they need in terms of cash for their basic needs, for their shelter, for their food, for their clothing, for gas in the car, and you're going to allow a certain amount of time, maybe depending on preferences, and having that money in a more liquid and perhaps a lower return investment.
Yeah, lower volatility, something generally 20, 25, 30% in stocks. And really the key is, Jim, that individuals just don't know this. I mean, it's not an IQ test, so to speak. They can be an engineer, an architect, they can be an attorney, a CPA, it doesn't matter. But most people, I think everybody in life has a gift that they're an expert at something, but most people aren't experts at multiple categories and multiple disciplines. So if they are an expert in those categories, they're generally not an expert in the area of personal finance. They really just don't have any idea, really, even what are my expenses while they're working, let alone projecting these forward into retirement. You know, what are my need expenses going to be? What are my want expenses going to be? So that's where you and I, with our teams, come in to be able to provide those answers and solutions.
Well, I mean, I think most financial advisors, let's say a client goes into the financial advisor and they ask them a bunch of questions about their risk tolerance and what keeps them up at night and things like that. And then they might say, well, okay, based on everything that you say, we're going to recommend a portfolio of 60% stocks and 40% bonds and so much in large cap and so much in mid cap and so much in small cap and so much in value and so much in growth and international and then all the subdivisions thereof. But ultimately, they're going to have, it might consist of a number of investments, but it's basically one general asset allocation. What you're describing, if I understand this right, is several asset allocations within one portfolio. Is that fair?
Yeah, under one household, under one roof, on average, we have three different strategies. And what you mentioned, Jim, was exactly correct in that a lot of people, and in fact, most of the individuals that come to us, they've been bundled in a portfolio. They may have 60% in stocks or 70%. And if you've got a portfolio, for example, when you take a look at a lot of money that fled the equity capital markets in 2008 and 2009, if you had 60 or 70% of your portfolio exposed to stocks, and that was the money that was earmarked to pay your electric bill, your gas bill, your property taxes, et cetera, it's no wonder why people, when their portfolio was down 30, 35% or more, that's just too much to handle for those need expenses. You really need a portfolio for that, for those expenses, what our professional opinion is, that won't drop by more than 10%.
All right. So, by the way, is that not more work if you have multiple portfolios for each client?
Yeah. It's a lot more work. It's a lot more of a pain. But there's, you know, I'm sort of a old-fashioned. I mean, it's almost like the military, be all you can be. There's a right way of doing things. And it's a lot more aggravating. And the first consultation, we sit down with individuals, it takes almost the whole entire meeting. And we tell folks, we sit down with them, you know, please be patient. It's taking you and your wife, you know, generally we're meeting with spouses, but it can be an individual, you know, managing the household. But whether it's an individual or a dyad, you know, husband and wife, it's taking you 40 years approximately to accumulate all these various types of assets that we're going to analyze over the course of the next few weeks or next month. So, you know, please be patient. But just that first meeting, capturing assets, liabilities, income, and expenses, and then being able to sort of normalize that for retirement, that's almost the entire first meeting. So, as you said, most advisors don't want to do the, you might refer to it as the grunt work. They just want to say, what do you have to work with? Let me get in there and start, as a lot of people in the investment world say, let me run the money. Let me just start investing this. But they really don't take a look at getting to know each family and each household on a personal level.
Well, by the way, I will personally vouch for this because I've seen you in action. And in all fairness to people, you know, I should mention that we have roughly $88 million that we are managing together. That is, you're managing the actual investments, and I'm involved in the some of the tax strategies. And I will tell you that people are really amazed at the amount of time that you put in. And it seems to me that if you have money set aside for basic needs for a certain period of time, that if you have a 2008 situation where the market goes way down, you can have the luxury of saying, okay, well, the market's way down, but the money that I need for the next 2 years or whatever the period might be is already safely put away in cash and CDs and income that we were expecting through Social Security and a pension, and therefore, rather than panicking and selling when it's low, I can just maintain the course and not sell, and then when, which has consistently happened, and perhaps you've had to wait a little bit, the market comes back, you didn't turn out to lose any money because you were spending money that was allocated for short-term needs. Is that also a fair characterization?
Yeah, it's just a lot easier. As we tell folks, it's a lot easier managing this proactively ahead of time rather than what happens to most folks is, you know, they gave their money to someone, they're quote-unquote running the money, they're just looking at it more as an investment perspective, and then whenever the you-know-what hits the fan, then they're calling their advisor, hey, just what exactly, or what are we doing, why are we doing it? So we've got a reason for everything. So again, it makes a lot easier for clients to stay in their seat and not overreact when they have a conservative strategy for their conservative goals, a moderate strategy for their moderate goals, and a growth goal for their growth goals. It sounds overly simplistic. It just takes a lot of front-end time to get it set up. Once we get it set up, it works like a charm.
Well, it does sound like a lot more work, but the other thing that I like about it is that it kind of takes some of the emotions out of investing, and I would imagine that a lot of people and a lot of investors really shoot themselves in the foot by leading with their emotions instead of just having a kind of a calmer, steadier, more rational approach.
Yeah, and that's what I, you know, the behavioral sciences have won the lion's share of Nobel Prizes the last decade or so. And that's really the emotions of individual investors. Why, when you take a look at Dalbar, an organization out of Boston, it tracks these things. You know, how has the S&P 500 index done over 8% the last 20 years, while the average individual managing their own money has done just a little bit over 4% with their stock component? So, you know, really they're looking at it under that sort of big basket approach, and they come to the party late, they leave the party early, you know, they buy when the market's too high, they sell when the market's low before it fully turns around. And that's really what a fully disciplined, complete financial approach that we work as sort of a recipe with Danuzzo Index Advisors and the Lang companies put together to be able to cover what we say all four corners of your personal finance home, to be able to have all these questions answered ahead of time. And nothing's perfect or easy, but it does make it a lot more reasonable to be able to live through these market volatility and market gyrations.
All right. Well, that's about the third time you use the word indexes. And I think some of our listeners are certainly aware of what an index fund is. But for those who aren't, or for those who understand some, and the name of your firm is Danuzzo Index Investors, could you tell our listeners what an index is and the difference between, let's say, a passively managed indexed fund versus a actively managed account?
Yeah, sure, Jim. That's a great point. But basically, we've got data going back into the 1920s. Of course, there were stocks traded back in the early to mid-1800s. But if we go back to the early 1900s into the 1920s, from the 1920s up and through the 1960s, even to the 70s, it was believed that somebody went to a better university. Let's say, you know, they went to an Ivy League school, but they went to a better university. Once they graduated, they were they burned the midnight oil. They worked harder. They did better research. And they could outsmart their fellow man, so to speak, as far as in the investing universe. Professor Fama from DFA came along and launched the new world, so to speak, the father of modern finance in 1965, and said, you know what, we've taken a look at the research, and basically, if you were just to hold the largest 20% of the stock market, and at that point in time, it was around 500 stocks, so a lot of the audience listeners may be familiar with the S&P 500 index, but that was really the genesis, was the largest 20% of the stock market, approximately 500 stocks. What if you just bought and held those stocks year in, year out? Now, the audience has to remember, a lot of people think of indexes as monolithic, static. If you take a look at it, if you think back when I was in high school, you know, a lot of younger audience listeners won't recognize this, but Bethlehem Steel was one of the largest companies in the stock market, whereas Microsoft wasn't even a gleam in Bill Gates' eye in a garage in Seattle yet. So it's basically a survival of the fittest. You've got these larger, older, more non-productive companies falling out, and you've got these younger companies. Of course, a number of years ago, Google, Facebook, you know, even going back a little bit further, Microsoft, they were not included. So basically what the research that came out by Professor Fama, mostly through the University of Chicago, said, you're going to be better off just holding a basket of stocks in the largest area of the market. You'll be better off holding a basket of stocks in the smallest area of the market, similar to the Russell 2000. Some audience listeners may be familiar with that. If you go on Yahoo Finance, you'll see they'll track that. And say, instead of trying to outsmart the market, these baskets, on average, over a 10-year period of time, outperform about 3 out of 4 times. So there will be an active manager over a 10-year period of time who will beat their respective index. But it's a little bit like a needle in a haystack. It's only about 1 out of 4 on average over 10 years.
Is that the same Professor Fama who was just named Nobel Prize winner?
Yeah, Gene, it's happy days in DFA land for us
okay.
here. I was bouncing around the office like a teenage girl on Monday. Gene, whenever we got the news that he had just won the Nobel Prize, you know, somebody that you know personally, I've got about a 20-year relationship with Professor Fama going back with DFA to the early 90s. And somebody that you know that has been rewarded for his research over since the early to mid 1960s. But yeah, Professor Eugene Fama, University of Chicago, just won, was awarded the Nobel Prize in Economics this past Monday.
Well, and it's basically for the same thing that you're talking about.
Yes, indexing, efficient market theory.
That the markets are efficient, and it's very hard for the people with the MBAs and the computers and all their analysis to outperform the market. Is that fair?
Yes, that's the essence of his research.
At this point, why don't we take a quick break?
The Lang Money Hour, where Smart Money talks, featuring the expert advice from CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang. More coming up right here on KQV.
You're listening to a pre-recorded encore presentation of the Lang Money Hour with CPA and attorney James Lang. Please do not call. If you should have any questions or like more information regarding the topics discussed, please call Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732 or go online to retiresecure.com.
Here's news of a special opportunity for Pittsburgh area attorneys. The Pennsylvania Bar Institute has asked Jim Lang to present a seminar as part of its continuing legal education program. On Thursday, November 14th, he'll conduct a 6-hour workshop designed specifically for attorneys and their spouses at the PBI's Professional Development Center, located in the Heinz 57 Center, 339 6th Avenue, in downtown Pittsburgh. Participants will receive 6 CLE credit hours, including 1 hour of ethics. Titled The Best Retirement and Estate Plan for Attorneys, this seminar is not intended to make you a better attorney, though it might. Rather, it's designed to help guide attorneys through tax-savvy strategies for accumulating, spending, and dispersing the assets they earn in their careers. Topics to be covered in detail include how attorneys can most effectively structure and manage their retirement plans, both during their lifetimes and at death. Roth IRA conversions for attorneys, integrating Roth IRA conversions and Social Security benefit maximization. The math behind combining these strategies to maximize your retirement. The best estate plan for married attorneys, including Lang's cascading beneficiary plan. And revocable trusts for attorneys. In addition to receiving the tools they need to navigate the complex and tax-sensitive issues of their own retirement and estate planning, participants will also get a free copy of Jim's best-selling book, The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Unlike other CLI seminars, attorneys are encouraged to bring along their spouses. At Jim's request, spouses do not have to pay seminar registration fees unless they are also seeking CLI credits. The Thursday, November 14th seminar will run from 8:30 a.m. to 4:15 p.m. To register, visit the Pennsylvania Legal Institute's website, pbi.org, and look for the seminar on the calendar of courses for November 14th. That's pbi.org.
The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 10. For all your financial needs, turn to the Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill. For more information, visit online at paytaxeslater.com. Let's talk more smart money.
And welcome back to the Lang Money Hour with Jim Lang and PJ Denuso. If you have a question or comment for PJ or Jim, call the KQV studios at 412-333-9385.
PJ, you had mentioned before that using an index fund, that companies, you use the example Bethlehem Steel, come and go, and companies that weren't even around at a certain point when the index was still active are gone. Is it fair to say that an index fund, whether it's Vanguard or any other type of named index fund, will have basically formulas? So let's say a classic S&P formula might be the top 500 U.S. companies, but at a certain point, and then that point would be defined, if the company is no longer in the top 500, then that company would be sold, and then a different company, or perhaps more than one other company, would come and take its place, so that you're going to have the top 500, but it's not going to be decided, well, we're going to sell this because we don't like the way the price earnings ratios look, or we're going to sell this because we think that the market for that product is drying up, but just purely based on size, that will also determine what goes in and out of an index fund. Is that fair characterization?
Yeah, that's very fair. We refer to it, there was a book written years ago, we refer to it as creative destruction. There's constantly new companies, embryonic companies growing, filling in new spaces in the economy. I mean, obvious one recently over the last decade plus has been technology. But through this creative destruction, there's always new companies growing out of the soil and amazingly growing into large companies. It's sort of funny. Years ago, Microsoft was actually held in DFA's. They actually have a micro cap index. They were one of the smallest 10% companies in the stock market. And today, obviously, most audience members would recognize they're a behemoth. They're one of the largest 1% companies in the entire stock market. So, yeah, it's a constant evolution that goes on within these indexes.
All right. So it's basically, though, it's formulaic. It's not like somebody's sitting around and I think Apple is going to do really well with the new iPhone, so we're going to buy Apple. And I think IBM is going to really have a problem with their new merger, so I'm going to sell IBM. It's just a matter of formulas.
Yeah,
well,
yes.
At a certain point, this company's off the S&P, and at another point, another company is on. Is that right?
Yeah, very rigid, very structured, very formulaic. That is correct.
All right. Now, let's say that some companies do better than other companies, and if you have this representative, and I think it's fair to say that you're not going to own 1/500th of each company, but you're going to own a representative share. So if you own the S&P 500, you're going to own a lot more Apple than you are of whatever number 500 is.
Yes, that is correct.
All right. So is it also fair to say that they will have formulas, that these indexes have formulas that will determine when and how much to buy and sell to keep somebody who owns the index consistent with that index?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, like you said, as you said, very formulaic, very structured, yes.
All right. Now, the best-known index, of course, is the Vanguard S&P 500 index. So it sounds like if somebody were to buy into that fund, that they would, in effect, be buying what is currently the top 500 U.S. companies owned proportionally. And then as some of these companies come and go, the index, according to the formula, would buy or sell some of these companies. Your interest would still be the S&P 500, but then you would still own these. You would still have buys and sells within the index itself. Is that fair?
Yes, that is correct.
All right, but the S&P is not the only index, and even forgetting Vanguard or the different companies, there's also, say, small company indexes and value indexes and international indexes and international small and international large and international value and emerging markets and emerging market value, et cetera, et cetera. So is it that these different companies have, or I'm sorry, these different funds have indexes of many different types of companies? In other words, not just large U.S., but all these other types of companies that a lot of people have in their portfolios.
Yes, basically every area of the market, both domestically in the U.S. and international, and then including emerging markets, there are indexes covering every area of the market. And one thing that Professor Pham, along with Professor Ken French, had identified years ago was there's certain areas, although there's a lot of indexes out there, there's really a smaller amount of areas where we would expect an additional premium over and above another area. So you just wouldn't want to go out and blindly invest in every area. You'd want to focus more and tilt a little bit more towards the areas that would provide a higher expected rate of return.
All right. Well, Professor Pham, I know, with his Nobel Prize and some of his other Nobel Prize associates, formed a company called Dimensional Fund Advisors, which is the company that you represent. And I think a lot of people sometimes have an issue trying to figure out, well, what's the difference between the different indexes? So, for example, if you were to have a, let's say, a portfolio from maybe 5 or 10 index funds that Vanguard put together versus a portfolio of 5 or 10 index funds that are part of Dimensional Fund Advisors, what would some of the differences, not just in performances, not just in performance, but what would some of the differences be between owning, say, a diversified Vanguard portfolio and a diversified Dimensional Fund Advisor portfolio? And for the moment, let's take the dimension of actually having an advisor, which comes with you and DFA or Dimensional Fund Advisors, where you don't necessarily get that kind of service from. Well, I don't want to say anything bad about Vanguard, because, by the way, I have a very high regard for Vanguard. I think they are an excellent set of index funds. But what would be some of the differences between a DFA and a Vanguard conceptually?
You know, we would say, Jim, is Vanguard and similar companies would basically be emulating or copying what we'd refer to as basically sort of retail indexes. The audience may be familiar with the S&P, Standard & Poor's, for example, the S&P 500. There's a lot of Russell indexes for small cap, value, et cetera. Internationally, there are a lot of MSCI indexes. So they're basically just copying or emulating that sort of off-the-shelf retail index. And again, don't get me wrong, the market is so efficient that just these retail indexes will do better in the majority to super majority of cases. But DFA really approaches it from a completely different perspective. And one thing we're keen to talk about with individuals, because DFA's performance, it has across the board, small to small, small value to small value, et cetera, across the board, has outperformed these retail indexes. But we always like to talk about it from a position of understanding the fundamentals. And the fundamentals are DFA is not attempting to outperform. It really goes back to this research with Professor Fama and his team of colleagues in the late 1950s and early to mid 1960s. And it's really about when you've identified U.S. small or U.S. small value or international small or emerging market small value, what have you, how can you most best capture that, the essence of that area of the market? And that's what DFA has really been at the upper 1% or upper 10% of all indexes as far as capturing the essence. One thing, you know, we get asked by clients all the time is, you know, how is DFA, their small cap indexes into its fourth decade now, how has it outperformed, for example, like the Vanguard small cap index for into the fourth decade now? You know, what is it that DFA is doing? And it's really the focus. DFA follows primarily a lot of what are called the FAMA / French, Professor Fama, Professor Ken French indexes that they structured decades ago. They're really following a much clearer, specific science. So for our small cap, where the Russell will say, you know, we're going to hold 2,000 stocks come heck or high water. That's how many we hold to represent the small cap universe. Professor Fama and French years ago will say, you know what? Some years really there might be 1,888 stocks in that year on average. Some other years might be 1,972. Some other years might be 2,221. So we're going to hold exactly however many stocks in the entire universe meet that criteria. Because as I mentioned earlier, if there is, which there is identified over the last 85 years, there's a small cap premium, the pure access we have to that area, the better our returns are going to be.
Well, you mentioned the small cap premium, meaning that over time, investors who invest in small companies, and I don't mean mom-and-pop grocery stores, but let's say billion-dollar companies instead of $100 billion companies, will typically outperform the larger companies. Is there also other biases that DFA has recognized and used to build portfolios differently, such as value versus growth?
Yeah, there's for years in the market, Professor William Sharp from Stanford won the Nobel Prize decades ago for capital asset pricing model. It's referred to as CAPM. And that was basically when it was identified was the market premium, the entire market. If you bought an entire market basket of stocks, versus what we call the risk-free rate, United States Treasuries, there's a large premium there. You're rewarded for that risk in investing in the market. Then the next premiums that were identified were Professor Fama and French with the value. Professor Rolf Band sort of broke the ice years ago from the University of Chicago on the small caps. So we had the market premium, stocks do better than bonds. We had the value premium, value does better than growth. And then the small premium, small does better than large over time. And now DFA, these are really heady days for us, so to speak. These are the salad days here, I think, maybe when we look back on it. But DFA just announced within the last year, Professor Fama and Professor French about 5 years ago broke the ice on this. And to make a long story short, there's another premium that we've introduced, which we refer to just simply as the expected profitability slash the expected return profitability premium. And then just last, just 2 weeks ago, about a week and a half before Professor Fama won the Nobel Prize, they just released research on the fifth premium, we're just referring to at this point in time as capital investment. So these are very exciting times that we didn't have. The academic community had not identified a premium since the early 1990s, and now we've got another two that we're working on here. And we've been incorporating, as of about 3 or 4 months ago, the profitability premium into our portfolio. So we've never had a better solution for the S&P 500 than the S&P 500 for the 25 years I've been in business. But now DFA has a U.S. large profitability index, and the last 40 to 50 years with a track record of 40-plus years on that index, the future looks very exciting for us to be able to add value for clients in that space as well.
Well, that's what it's really about, and I'm trying to avoid talking about performance because there's some compliance issues, and I don't want to confuse anybody, but I'll certainly say that for anybody who really does take a good look, and either you or I would be happy to show them, some of these concepts that you're talking about that are so good actually does end up being reflected in the performance of the funds and in the portfolio itself.
Yes, that is correct.
As a matter of fact, I understand that there is also some recent recognition of dimensional fund advisors, because you see articles, from time to time, but there was just some recent recognition in Barron's. Is that right?
Yeah, just a couple of Saturdays ago, there was a tremendous write-up there. And it's always nice to get that independent third-party confirmation when you have someone that has no skin in the game, as you said earlier. You know, you get an independent third-party confirmation. They took a look at DFA, I think, 10 or 15 years ago. And you have to remember, the audience has to remember, when Professor Fama came out with his initial paper on efficient market theory in 1965 with his hypothesis, he was basically ostracized by even the academic community. I mean, basically, in plain English and Pittsburgh language, he's viewed as cuckoo. I mean, you're saying, you know, that you can just buy a basket of stocks and do better than individuals graduating from Ivy League schools that have PhDs and MBAs and floors of computer power. And we've got people on the ground out interviewing managers at General Electric, taking them out to dinner, picking their brains, everything else. He was really ostracized for a number of years. But again, it's you can fight. What's the old saying? The old saying, you could fight armies, a legion of armies, but you can't fight a legion of ideas, so to speak. So this idea, it is here to stay. The markets are very efficient. Every day, you've got a day where you've got 5 million buyers and 5 million sellers. They're agreeing on a specific price. If you had 5 million buyers and 5 million sellers come in and value a house in any suburb in Pittsburgh, that price that they've agreed upon collectively, millions of buyers, millions of sellers, is going to be very, very accurate relative to the fair market value of that residence. No one's going to be able to sit in Poughkeepsie, New York, or Peoria, Illinois, or Sacramento, California, and say, hey, I can sit back here on high and I can see mispricings in this market. These millions of buyers and millions of sellers who looked at this property, they're wrong. They were either undershot it or overshot it. That just doesn't happen. It will happen, you know, on infrequently, but not frequently enough for somebody to be able to access that and take advantage of it.
Well, as I understand that there was another company that was formed roughly the same time, and it was known as Bogle's Folly, because Jack Bogle had a similar idea that...
And he was ostracized as well, yeah.
Yes, he was. Yeah. And Bogle's Folly, of course, is now...
the largest.
The Vanguard S&P 500.
Largest mutual fund in the world, yeah.
Well, right. You know, can we take one more break here? This is a good time.
Okay.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice from CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang. More coming up right here on KQV.
Here's news of a special opportunity for Pittsburgh area attorneys. The Pennsylvania Bar Institute has asked Jim Lang to present a seminar as part of its continuing legal education program. On Thursday, November 14th, he'll conduct a 6-hour workshop designed specifically for attorneys and their spouses at the PBI's Professional Development Center, located in the Heinz 57 Center, 339 6th Avenue, in downtown Pittsburgh. Participants will receive 6 CLE credit hours, including 1 hour of ethics. Titled The Best Retirement and Estate Plan for Attorneys, this seminar is not intended to make you a better attorney, though it might. Rather, it's designed to help guide attorneys through tax-savvy strategies for accumulating, spending, and dispersing the assets they earn in their careers. Topics to be covered in detail include how attorneys can most effectively structure and manage their retirement plans, both during their lifetimes and at death. Roth IRA conversions for attorneys, integrating Roth IRA conversions and Social Security benefit maximization. The math behind combining these strategies to maximize your retirement. The best estate plan for married attorneys, including Lang's Cascading Beneficiary Plan. And revocable trusts for attorneys. In addition to receiving the tools they need to navigate the complex and tax-sensitive issues of their own retirement and estate planning, participants will also get a free copy of Jim's best-selling book, The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Unlike other CLI seminars, attorneys are encouraged to bring along their spouses. At Jim's request, spouses do not have to pay seminar registration fees unless they are also seeking CLI credits. The Thursday, November 14th seminar will run from 8:30 a.m. to 4:15 p.m. To register, visit the Pennsylvania Legal Institute's website, pbi.org, and look for the seminar on the calendar of courses for November 14th. That's pbi.org.
You're listening to a pre-recorded encore presentation of the Lang Money Hour with CPA and attorney James Lang. Please do not call. If you should have any questions or like more information regarding the topics discussed, please call Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732 or go online to retiresecure.com.
The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all your financial needs, turn to the Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill. For more information, visit online at paytaxeslater.com. Let's talk more smart money.
And welcome back to the Lang Money Hour with PJ Danuzzo and Jim Lang.
PJ, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I think maybe even if just a number of our listeners are interested, I think that it would be very valuable, is to distinguish the process that somebody might go through if they were interested in the combination of our services, because I belong to different financial groups, and I give talks around the country, and I will tell you, one of these days, I'm going to get somebody from the Big Eight, or I guess now it's the Big Four, put my hand on a lie detector test and tell you that I don't think that there is a better combination for people who are interested in low-cost index funds than you actually managing the money using Dimensional Fund Advisors and our office actually providing some of the strategies, Roth, Social Security, tax planning, safe withdrawal rate, estate planning, et cetera. But if we could be a little bit more specific, because I think, frankly, one of the ways that you distinguish yourself is the process and the amount of time that you go through. Now, I know that by background, you're also a CPA and you have a master's in tax, and you think very quantitatively. And that you sometimes, I don't want to use the word torture, but you actually work out how much cash or how much spending people are going to have in the next, say, year or 2 years, and then construct portfolios differently based on your findings. Can you tell us a little bit about the process that you go through for somebody who is interested in your services and why that has worked out well for you, me, and the prospect?
Sure, Jim. I'll try to make this as brief as possible. you try to keep everything to 10 steps or less to be able to keep people's attention. And the 10 steps that we've come down to on our process, initially we start off with folks, we refer to it as the life planning level, setting goals and objectives. A lot of times individuals really haven't given any thought to, you get married, your life's hectic, you're about having a job, you start to have a family maybe, you have kids, you have a couple or fewer, a bunch of kids, maybe grandkids later. You're working and you're just throwing this money over your shoulder, but you never really sit down. And it's amazing. Some meetings are a little bit uncomfortable, to tell you the truth, because if it's a married couple, for example, there's often times when a husband and wife have been married for 25, 30, 35, 40 years and have never really sat down and had this conversation. Oh, okay, those are your goals and objectives. Well, really, that's not what I want to do. I mean, so going in different directions, not really being on the same page. So we take a lot of time at the beginning, you know, what are our goals and objectives? What's important to you? And it sounds corny when I say it, Jim, but we just refer to every situation as a snowflake. Every individual, every husband and wife, every family unit, whoever you run into, complete different goals, objectives. And we always take a lot of time at the beginning to let individuals know where other human beings have gone wrong. So this behavioral science, as we've said before, our innate abilities that we have, we're very highly wired to avoid danger. And there's often overreaction to the stock market, the capital markets, the financial markets, and individuals. I mean, in order for individuals to only have performance of a little bit over 4% the last 20 years, when the S&P 500 performed over 8% total return, that's a lot of mistakes. And everybody makes mistakes, but that's not just one or two or three. That's multiple. So understanding where others have gone wrong before from a behavioral science perspective. Then we just roll up our sleeves. We get into the good old-fashioned financial planning. We develop that balance sheet. As we say, a lot of things we use are corny, but you know, our financial house is only going to be as sturdy and sound as our footer and foundation. So we've got to build a solid footer and foundation financially, balance, personal balance sheet, assets, liabilities, personal income statement, the income and expenses. We want to know what are fixed, what are variable expenses. And then, as you've seen before, Jim, we'll draw up that Danuzzo money bucket stack analysis, where we identify, if we tell clients metaphorically, if they think that if they both walked into the office for that initial no cost, no obligation consultation with a couple of metaphorical wheelbarrows, 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, mutual funds, CDs, bank accounts, checking accounts, and they dump all that in the floor and say, hey, Danuzzo and Lang, we've been working on this our whole entire lives for 30, 40 years, and we never really paid attention to it. Can you help us make some sense out of this giant stack of assets on the floor? So if we think of that as money, we stack it from the floor to the ceiling, and let's start to identify that again. What is our cash reserves? We want to have at least 12 months in that cash reserve bucket when we go into retirement, so we're not flinching when something happens in the market. Hey, I've got at least 12 months of my expenses, maybe even up to 3 years if we're able to. Go through that next bucket we talked about earlier for food, clothing, shelter, healthcare, and transportation. Go through the next want bucket for the additional vacation, travel, gifting to children. And then if we have a quality of life or legacy bucket on top, then once we do that, Jim, what we say is we've now have a roadmap that we know approximately how much money to put in stocks in these approximately three different strategies that we have, conservative, moderate, and growth. We know how much to put in stocks. We know how much in withdrawals. We have to withdraw from the portfolio. So if we come in and take a look initially, and it's amazing, Jim, when individuals come in and talk with us, they're not sure if they really are able to make it or not. And we go through this process, and they have $400,000 in extra money. I mean, their faces just light up. It's like they grow 3 or 4 inches just sitting in their seat. In other cases, we've had folks come in and think they're well ahead of the game and are sort of letting off the gas pedal a little bit, and they think they're well ahead of the game and they're short a couple $100,000. So it's by going through this process, we're able to bring everything into focus. Then once we do bring it into focus, it's what you were talking about earlier, and it sounds very trite, sounds very commonplace. We all talk about diversification, and what listener listening to the show wouldn't say, yeah, diversify. Who doesn't know to diversify? You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. But really true diversification, and one thing that you and I, Jim, have been on the same page with is when I started my practice years ago, I just went and looked at the largest, smartest, best-performing portfolios, the foundations, endowments, institutions, and you take a look at, you know, two-thirds of stocks in the U.S., one-third in international, two-thirds in large, one-third in small. I mean, our average DFA portfolio owns well over 10,000 stocks in over 40 countries across the globe. So real true diversification in the areas we wanted that you mentioned earlier, value, small, and these other areas, and then set that asset allocation. So we're able to say maybe 30% in stocks for the food, clothing, and shelter, 40 or 50 for the need for the want expenses, anywhere from 60 at a minimum up to 100 for those for the wish list, for the legacy quality of life assets. And then we say at that point in time, Jim, is what I got back to, because I took my lumps investing in the late 70s and through the 80s. And when I finally found out the hard way that the market was very efficient. And if the listeners can just think, you've worked your entire life for 30 or 40 years, why try to invest and put your life savings investing on that needle in the haystack philosophy? Let's take what works 3 out of 4 times over the average 10-year period of time. And then if someone does get that far down the road with us and say, hey, I've taken a look at this. I do believe indexing really works. The market is efficient, so efficient that you can't outsmart, especially not over the rest of the next 30 years of my life. Then that's where I came up with DFA years ago. I was using the Vanguard indexes in the late 1980s. And when DFA was willing to accept me in the early 1990s, I was elated because my core belief was that they were the best index manager in the country. And then once we put this all together, it sounds like a lot of finance, a lot of numbers and everything, but it's all about, you know, the last step is really, you know, place us on a glide path, place these portfolios where they're going to get more conservative over the rest of our lifetimes, the money that we're taking withdrawals out of. And the key word in this whole process is relax. We really want to relax. We don't want to be losing sleep, worried about our portfolio, watching it on a daily basis. We want to have the confidence, invest like the largest portfolios in the country. And one thing we didn't talk about, Jim, the beauty of these indexes and DFA, low fees, low expenses. I mean, it's extraordinarily powerful. Our fee across the country, across the region, and the investments we hold in the portfolio, very low fees, very low expenses across the board as well.
Well, again, I think I want to avoid talking specifically about performance. But one thing that I can talk about is that the combination of people working with both your firm and our firm, and we've been doing this just really a little, we really kind of got going less than 2 years ago when we're up to about $85 million already. So this has been literally explosive growth considering the size of our firms. Can you tell me, do people stick? So let's say that, you know, I think that if somebody, at least the kind of clients that we want, we're not looking for a 1 or 2 year relationship. In fact, if you do all that work that you described, we only keep a client, and then that doesn't include the Roth analysis that our firm does, the Social Security analysis, the tax planning, the projections, et cetera, et cetera. If we only keep a client 1 or 2 years and we've done all that work up front or even after just a year, then that's not going to work out very well for us or the client. Can you tell us a little bit about the retainage rate that you have had, let's say, in your own firm, and then the retainage rate of our clients that we have worked together?
Oh, yeah, Jim. Yeah, our retention rate working together has been actually north of 99%. Our retention rate has been in the high 90s. The 25 years we've been in business, it'll fluctuate 97, 98, 99, but especially with us working together, we have an extraordinarily high retention rate, very high client satisfaction level. So again, 99% is a very high retention rate. And it really is all about customizing us. As we say, you know, we tell folks whenever we first meet with them that we know we're not a perfect fit for everyone. We're not salespeople. We're wealth managers and financial planners. We're willing to invest two to two and a half, even sometimes 3 hours at a meeting for two meetings. So 4 or 5, maybe even 6 hours of face-to-face time to get to know someone. We go back to the office and do hours and hours of homework. So we're willing to invest that because, as you said Jim, a lot of firms, and that's the difference between your practice and ours working together, that other individuals look at people, sort of tell them anything that they want to hear. Let's get them in, start billing them. Even if they fire us after a year or two, we made money off of them. But in our case, we look at a long-term perspective. I mean, even if someone left us within 5 years, to me, it would be a disaster. We're looking, again, for long-term relationships. We don't want to force anything. We want to be an excellent long-term fit for someone for the rest of their financial life.
And I know David is squirming right now.
Because you better.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
I will just mention one other last point, and that is that both your firm and our firm are what is known as fiduciary advisors, meaning that we not only have the moral but the legal responsibility to do not as what is best for us, but what is best for the client.
Yes.
And I've seen statistics as high as 90% and higher of the financial firms are not fiduciary advisors.
Yeah, we're in a minority, yes, sir.
Well, at that point, we could go on, but let's stop here and say thanks to P.J. DeNuzzo. You can reach him at his firm's website, denuzzo.com. Thanks also to Dan Weinberg, our in-studio producer, and Lang Financial Group Program Coordinator, Amanda Cassidy Swinesburg. As always, you can hear an encore broadcast of this show at 9:05 this Sunday morning here on KQV and access the audio archive of past shows, including written transcripts at the Lang Financial Group website, paytaxeslater.com. And finally, please join us on Wednesday, November 6th at 7:05 when we'll welcome Social Security expert and writer Mary Beth Franklin to the next new edition of the Lang Money Hour.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Check out the show archives and listen on demand anytime at paytaxeslater.com. KQV listeners can receive free tickets to Jim Lang's Pittsburgh area workshops and more. Call the Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732 and reserve your seats and meet Jim Lang in person or visit paytaxeslater.com. That's paytaxeslater.com.